This is Radio Today.
Changing Destiny is proudly brought to you by WEM Media, right here on Radio Today. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
Welcome to Changing Destiny. My name is Paul Pereira. Now, when we talk about social mobility in South Africa and how people are doing, of course, we're always talking, without really mentioning it often, at the bottom line in what they own. And at that bottom line, property. Is it still the most enduring and the best investment for people? And can young people, first-time buyers, even enter the property market, or have they, in effect, been locked out by high prices in suburbia? And I'm referring, of course, also to people in the lower middle classes, people like teachers, civil servants, who find themselves locked into townships. Despite the fact that we have, and a lot of people don't realize this, witnessed over the last 20 years, the fastest and the largest provision of formal housing in human history. And that is what South Africa has and is accomplishing with the National Housing Program. But of course, there's that's in sort of the taking from the informal to the formal. And then there is the formal suburban market. And in just Johannesburg itself, property has, in terms of units, doubled in 18 years. So we built Johannesburg over 130 years to one size, and we doubled it in another 18 years. So talking about this and then talking about entrepreneurship is a whiz-bang property realtor from Durban, and that is Julie Solomon. And we'll be chatting with Julie. She's actually from up here, from Gauteng. She's big down in Durban, not only for property. She comes to property from various entrepreneurial activities, from the stage. And she's now not only in command of her own property company, Julie Solomon Properties down there, but she's also the head of a global operation, or its Durban branch, and that's called the Millionaire Underdog Club, and that's the creation of the famous wealth guru JT Fox. And we'll be chatting with Julie Solomon just after we've listened to Michael Bublé's Home.
Come and gone away from Paris or Rome, but I wanna go home. Maybe surrounded by a million people, I still feel all alone. Just wanna go home. Oh, I miss you, you know. And I've been keeping all the letters that I wrote to you, each one a line or two. I'm fine, baby, how are you? Well, I would send them, but I know that it's just not enough. My words were cold and flat, and you deserve more. Another aeroplane, another sunny place. I'm lucky, I know, but I wanna go home. I got to go home. Let me go home. I'm just too far from where you are. I wanna come home. I'm living someone else's life. It's like I just stepped outside when everything was going right. And I know just why you could not come along with me. This was not your dream, but you'll always believe. come and gone away in either Paris or Rome, and I wanna go home. Let me go home. And I'm surrounded by a million people. I still feel alone. Let me go home. Oh, I miss you, you know. Let me go home. Let me go home. It'll all be alright. I'll be home tonight. I'm coming back home.
Welcome back. Coming back home to Changing Destiny and Paul Pereira. And today we're chatting with Julie Solomon. And as I was saying just before the song, we have Julie up from Durban. We're lucky to have her in town. She's not often here, but Julie is the head of Julie Solomon Property, and we will discuss her other entrepreneurial activities. Julie, welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you, Paul. It's really great to be back, can I say, in my old stomping ground, where the studio is based. I know the area really well, although it has changed considerably. But, yeah, awesome to be here, and thank you for having me.
Because you are a Gautenger, except it wasn't called Gauteng. Tell us a bit about your growing up. And when I look at that whole story, we're not talking about just the old plodding along. You were sort of the lemonade sales kid from the get-go.
Yep, I think I always had a scheme, something up my sleeve. I always had this, I think I was born with this entrepreneurial spirit, always a desire to better myself, to try out something new. And I remember, gosh, as a kid back in primary school in Benoni, yep, I'm from Benoni.
We love it, we're from here.
Absolutely. Well, Benoni, I think there's something in the water, and there are a lot of successful people who have come out of Benoni, incredibly successful, so I'm proud to say I'm from Benoni. I remember my days at primary school. We have entrepreneurial day. I remember buying strings of biltong and chopping it up, putting into little packets and reselling it to my classmates. I started a ceramic business, making little plaques to put on walls when ceramics were really fashionable. There was always something on the go. You know, I was always felt that there was something exciting that I was destined for. And I've never been a great follower of rules, if we could put it that way.
Yeah.
So to be in charge rather than to be told what to do is kind of something that I've always favored. So, you know,
and that probably helps to explain the thespian side, because there's a whole part then of your life that is you on stage.
Yeah, you know, that was another interest of mine, again, from when I was a kid. And I used to schlep 5 times a week from Benoni to the Colton Center. I used to go to drama, dancing, singing lessons with Delia Sainsbury, who's now based in Cape Town. And I thought that's what I want to be. I want to be this famous actress. And, you know, I did work for a couple of years as a professional performer, as a professional actress, and it was fantastic. But the one thing I really did miss was that business side of it. You know, when you are a thespian, you're not really involved that much in business, and I missed it, and the calling was back again. And I did my stint as the performer, and I can say, yes, I have done that, but I definitely prefer being an entrepreneur.
But is that a thing of the struggling artist versus the entrepreneur because of financial reward, or is there something deeper to these two pools? Because they're quite different pools, aren't they?
Very different pools, but they've also complemented one another. You know, I think having the theatre background experience has given me the confidence to be able to put myself out there, to speak to people. You know, some people say I am a bit drama-ish. But everything has, you know, it's niched together and made me what I am today. So I'm grateful for the opportunities that have come my way.
Well,
I love property.
You've certainly put yourself out there. You're all over the internet. You're well known as a speaker at public events. And talking on the property stuff, I mean, this is where you have, I guess, specialized over the years. And when we talk about property, I spoke in my introduction about sort of the lower end, if we're at the bottom of the pyramid almost, when it comes to property. And I was referring in part to a study that came out from a group who have this crazy name. It's called the Gauteng City Regional Observatory. But what it is it's a research group of the universities of Johannesburg, Wits, and of the Gauteng City Provincial Government. And they were looking at house prices. This is now, of course, in Gauteng.
Mm-hmm.
And the times or the multiples of salaries required for repayments versus what is considered acceptably affordable in OECD countries around the world. And that certainly in this province, they were warning that prices are so high in suburbia compared to the salaries of what I would call the basic middle class. I'm talking civil servants, teachers, people
that they're locked out. Yep, that divide is certainly widening. But having said that, I still believe that property in South Africa is one of the cheapest across the globe. You know, if you look at other countries, property on a comparison to what your earning scale is it's a far greater division between the two. So, you know, we have to look at, I sort of think to myself, I bought my first property when I was 23. Yes, in Benoni, and I've always had a love for property. And I look at, you know, my daughter who's 21, and how on earth is she going to afford her first property? But there is a way around that. And I do believe our youth and certainly, you know, our sort of middle class needs to look at getting onto that property scale, onto the property ladder as soon as they possibly can.
And so, is it always the obvious way, you know, by the tiny little flat in a complex or are there cleverer ways?
Well, I think what we have to do is don't necessarily look at buying a property or acquiring a property that you or yourself are going to live in, because it is cheaper to rent your lifestyle and then go off and buy a little property in the CBD. You know, look at Mabuneng, look at Durban CBD, look at Joburg, something that you can afford and become a landlord. Put a tenant in, and now we're looking at something that's going to cost you maybe 200,000 or 250,000 rand, so it makes it affordable for somebody who, you know, has a limited budget. Rent your lifestyle, buy your apartment, put a tenant in.
So you rent your lifestyle and you landlord your property.
Absolutely, because what you like and what you would live in can often be two totally different things. Let the property market, let that circle go around. That property you bought will increase in value. So in a few years' time, you can then utilize that and raise capital on that to then fund something else. Or you could sell that, make a profit, and then you've got a deposit for your own home. So there are ways in which the youth can get onto the property ladder. We just have to be a little bit more clever about it.
And tell me, it's always the enduring, the best investment you can make in your life. Is that still true?
I firmly believe that. Now, I know there's some people out there that might not agree with me, but it's my opinion.
But why do you say that, apart from the fact that that's the investment that you watch closest?
Yeah.
Outside of that, what makes you think that?
Well, just look back on history. I mean, if you look at, you know, property prices in 2007 went absolutely dilly, crazy. I mean, in some suburbs, prices quadrupled virtually overnight.
I think that's when Parkhurst changed from being very quaint to being extremely good investment.
There we go. So if you had bought, you know, pre that cycle, then you were in the pound seeds. That will happen again. Your property investment, it's always cyclical. You know, so yes, we might have a couple of years where property prices hold firm, or they maybe even drop a little bit. But if you hang in there long enough, you will turn a profit, and a really healthy profit. You know, so for somebody who doesn't understand maybe the stock exchange or can't afford to buy shares or has no idea about offshore investing, property is a localized, easy to understand and manage investment portfolio for
somebody. It's owning a piece of the earth.
It is.
But that piece of the earth is often moving, not that particular piece, but where property really, really matters. And if I just look, I was just in Durban 2 weeks ago, and I was there on business, and the CBD is no longer where the CBD used to be. That's in Mhlanga Rocks now. And, of course, that's happened in Johannesburg. And we see the melding of Johannesburg and Pretoria through Midrand, through the waterfall developments, through the new Africa mall that's going up. All of this that is bringing these two cities together to what the Gordon Institute of Business Science says will be one of the 10 largest metropoles in the world in spread. Mm-hmm. It seems to be so quick that what was an area good to invest in, that the locus of investment value moves so quickly. How does one even get a good, I mean, prediction of where one needs to be, because it moves fast.
It does move fast, absolutely. But you have to look at the population of South Africa. Are there enough homes for every single, is there enough property for every single person in South Africa? No, there is not. So whether your market changes, your CBD moves, the CBD is not emptying. Yes, it's changing, and maybe a different type of person is moving into that. That doesn't necessarily say it's a bad investment. It's a different type of investment. Yeah. So again, affordable housing is in an area that maybe you or I or somebody else wouldn't choose to live in, but it could still be a really good investment vehicle for somebody. If you have a look at the Maboneng precinct that Jonathan Liebman has revitalized, and he's now starting to do the same thing in Durban CBD. I mean, there was a block, an office block, which he's refurbished, sectionalized, and has now sold apartments. That was the, and it was Durban, the fastest selling development that he's ever had in his 7-year history. That sold out in a matter of 3 months. And that's just absolutely unheard of.
And if you and have that's a look because at, he's answering price in a particular place, but he's also doing it aspirationally?
Well, yeah. I mean, prices there range from $360,000 for a bachelor apartment up to the penthouse at $1.5 million. And what was so interesting is the profile of person that was actually making these purchases. There was no particular age group that dominated. There was no particular race group that dominated. There were people from all walks of life actually buying those apartments. It was just quite phenomenal to see the interest in the revitalization of the CBD. Now, an apartment at 360,000 Rand is within the reach of many, many people. So that would be a good place to start for somebody who wants to put that first foot on the ladder of their property investment portfolio.
Well, indeed, if you look at some research that's done by the Caxton newspapers, now they tend to be the knock and drops of the very local community papers. So they have to keep a sense of, they do very, very, very in-depth research on how suburbs change because they're writing for that market. And what they have found is just over the last less than a decade, massive change in the profile of suburbs, but not in the salary and earning potential or actualities of suburbs. So in other words, there's a talk really in that work of how South Africa is changing.
South Africa is changing absolutely everywhere, and it's something that we I think is so exciting and dynamic. If you look at CBDs across the world, the same thing is happening. So it's nothing unusual or untoward. We just have to get our head around it, and it's not necessarily a bad thing at all. There's such a high demand wherever you go across South Africa for rental properties. So whilst that demand is there, and I don't see that ever changing, there's always an opportunity to provide a home for somebody.
We're chatting with Julie Solomon, and we'll continue doing that, and we'll be talking a bit about entrepreneurship, her work with across global entrepreneurial networks, and also about branding yourself. And we'll be doing that just after we've listened to Louise Carver's Home.
I've been washed out to sea, looking at the land, I can't find love, I do not have a compass, following the stars, saved by the moonlight, I only got one plan, and I'm too afraid to use. you deep inside. And all I can say is be cautious, this girl leaves if not love. And all I can say is I want you, my heart, don't stop away. Don't you call me a user.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny with Paul Pereira and Julie Solomon. Julie, you've spoken a lot on public stages about entrepreneurship, and not really surprising when you started off as a little school kid entrepreneur, and you still are one. In this country, very often this is put up as the answer to all our problems. Entrepreneur, but I mean, entrepreneurs aren't things that are created. I mean, they are things that are within themselves, are they not? And how does one become successful? What are the things to look for in identifying an entrepreneur, and I would say particularly women entrepreneurs?
I really believe it's the ability to just want something better for yourself in life. You know, no matter how many hours you put into a job, that's a set salary that you're going to earn. And if you want to better yourself or just look for other opportunities and expand your horizons, there's so much opportunity in this country. There really is. And one of the easiest ways to be successful is just do something that's simple, maybe something that's already been done, but do it better. And service is a huge issue in this country. I mean, our service levels are shockingly bad. If you just did exactly what the person next door was doing, but you did it at a far superior service level, you're immediately so much better and you would be more successful. So it's not often inventing something new and weird and wonderful. It's just doing what's already been done, but so much better. Look after your customers. Give them a good experience. Solve their problems for them. And that goes a long way to being successful.
A lot of people look to the young to be entrepreneurs, but of course the problem with that is that they have no experience.
No one's teaching them.
Yeah, so they haven't been in the formal market. They haven't picked up a sort of ordinary skills. Where do you think the bracket really is for the most likely entrepreneurs to emerge from?
I think once you hit your 30s, all right, you've been in the job market, you've got these responsibilities now, you know exactly, you feel comfortable within yourself, and you know exactly where you're going, but we do need help. And something I've learned very recently, because up until that, I was very guilty of this. I was always very proud that I've done it on my own. You know, I didn't have a husband funding me. I didn't have a slush fund funding me. I've done it by myself. And I've come to realize that's actually the wrong way to go about doing it. And since I got rid of that mindset and learned to have a team around you, ask for help, admit that perhaps you don't know something, look for a mentor, look for a coach. Those beliefs of mine have changed so completely, and it's taken my business to a completely different level. It really has. It's just blown it out of the water. It's made a huge difference.
You said something just now, you almost sort of jumped in, the passion coming out there. You were saying nobody shows them, nobody helps. Mm. What are the sort of networks that one could have?
You need to be able to better yourself and you know, go out there and learn and find ways to learn. You know, it's a classic. No one's going to knock on your door and go, right, I want to make you a successful entrepreneur. So we have to look to ourselves, where we're going to learn, where we're going to get this knowledge. And it really comes down to every successful person has some kind of a coach. All right. You need...
So it's a mentor almost.
A mentor, a coach, call it what you like. But somebody you can go to for advice who can say, that's not a good idea. Perhaps you should try that. You know, you need somebody who can bounce ideas off. Somebody who could say, don't do that. Rather do this. Or have you thought about this possibility? So, coaching is just fantastic.
What is the trick with coaching or mentorship? Is it about almost like a psychologist would do, bringing out of the mentee information they have, or is it actually instructing?
I think it's a little bit of both, all right? Because it's not a case of, okay, this is what you do and that's what you do and you follow blindly.
Yeah.
You have to still come up with the ideas and they have the passion and the vision to know where you want to go. But it's a sounding board. But somebody who's actually going to hold you accountable, that's it. It's accountability. You know, we don't want somebody who's going to, oh, yes, Julie, that's lovely. Yes, do that. No, I want to say, Julie, that is a terrible idea. You're wrong. I don't agree with you. Think again. Come up with a different idea. Someone who's not scared to call the shots and actually say, rethink something. That's what you need. Someone who's going to hold you accountable and then be able to also back it up with the skills that you've got.
Now, somebody who's made a huge name for himself worldwide mm-hmm. as a kind of a wealth guru type mentor to the masses, if you like.
Yes.
Is this guy J.T. Fox, but not everybody will know him. Tell us.
J.T. Fox, well, what a personality. You know, it's a case of loving or hate him. He's quite
Is he quite brash?
He is, and he actually laughs and he calls himself, you know, I'm the brash American. And when I first met him 3 years ago, I thought exactly that. I thought, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, that we call it bragging. The Americans call it marketing and branding.
Righty.
And that's something he's taught us is start branding yourself. Start telling your story. There is a way to talk about your success without it actually sounding big-headed. And utilize that as a platform for people to know what you're doing, to understand where you're going, and yes, maybe possibly be impressed with what you're doing. And it opens up opportunities. It gives you a fantastic platform to be where you are. And I wouldn't be here today talking to you if it wasn't for J.T. Fox and the coaching I've got from him. I was kind of like hiding my success under a bushel and I mustn't brag about what I do. And branding and using social media to expand that platform is a phenomenal.
You do it very well, but you also own the Durban chapter of his Global Millionaire Underdog Club. What is that?
That's correct. So Millionaire Underdog Club is a entrepreneurial club that J.T. Fox has started in association with a local person in each country or each province. And the aim is to have 30 clubs across the world in the next 3 months, and certainly within the next 6 months to have 150 clubs across the world, which will globally connect entrepreneurs. I'd be able to connect with people in London, in Oslo, in Malaysia, just again to broaden the horizons, to put successful people together, because it just takes one deal. It takes one relationship, one bright idea. It sparks something off and a whole
new business is born from it. It's kind of a networking thing.
It is incredible networking, but networking on a different platform.
A networking with some instruction to each other, or is there no sort of peer review, as it were, of each other's good ideas?
I would say not peer review, but peer help, assistance and support. Then we also have the overview of J.T. Fox and all his coaches as well to be able to call on that. So it's supporting one another. You know, somebody, one of the members of the club can come and say, I'm finding XYZ to be a problem. The members of the club can say, right, how do we resolve that? So also being a bit of a mentor and a coach to everyone, to one another in the Millionaire Underdog Club.
We've been chatting with Julie Solomon, and we would love to continue doing that, but we've run out of time. Julie, if people do want to follow you, and as I said, you're very active online, and of course you have the Millionaires Underdog Club, and you active through property platforms in Durban as well, and you are up here from time to time. How do they do that? How do people follow Julie Solomon?
On Facebook, I'm Julie Solomon Property, and we also Millionaire Underdog Club Durban, and then there's my public page, Julie Solomon. Also on Instagram, Julie Solomon NN, and we can connect that way. I'd be happy to connect with people.
Thanks for coming on the show and doing it on a night when you actually have a big launch of a J.D. Fox event this evening.
Always a pleasure.
And listeners will be able to get hold of you on those particular platforms. And, of course, the main one is www.juliesolomonproperty.co.za. And thank you listeners of Changing Destiny, for joining me, Paul Pereira, and producer Trevor Mashlali, and also for joining Julie Solomon. And please do the same thing at the same time next week on South Africa's Thinking Station, Radio Today, 1485 AM in Johannesburg, and from Dar es Salaam to Cape Town on DSTV Audio Channel 869. Goodbye.